Welcome into another edition of College Golf Talk. Burko and Brentley with you. We're putting this one to tape. That's old school radio term, early 90s. On a Thursday, just afternoon, President's Cup week, less than an hour away from seeing the matches get going in the Queen City. I was up in Charlotte for a few days, got back late last night. But we can always carve out time, Brentley, to talk a little bit of college golf, regardless of what's happening.
Did you do radio back in the day, Burko?
That's how I started. I was a radio guy through and through. 4.5 years out of college in Columbia, South Carolina before joining. Now, yeah, that was definitely not spinning any vinyl, strictly sports. I stayed in my lane, as I know you stay in your lane, right? We play to our strengths.
Yeah, I mean, we got President's Cup matches. I'm going to be working this afternoon, but it's time to talk college golf. I'm very fortunate that we have this little morning buffer where there's no professional golf being played, and we can just get down to what we do best.
Absolutely. We'll talk about the ladies and the men, what happened this past week. Also, a little bit later on in this edition of the pod, Michael Thorbjornsson, the standout from Stanford, will join us. We're going to have a little bit of fun with him, but before we get to Michael, we're going to take care of some business. As you know, College Golf Talk brought to you by Velocity Global as they seamlessly connect employers and talent, anyone, anywhere, anytime, anyhow. Its global work platform is built on cloud-based technology, compliance expertise, and unmatched scale in 185 countries in all 50 United States. The world of work, we know it now. It is forever changed. Talent can live anywhere, work for anyone, and get the job done. And more than 1,000 businesses engage top talent in another state or country without the need to set up a foreign entity or registration. And they rely on Velocity Global to make it simple and compliant. Velocity Global, accelerating the future of work. To learn more, visit velocityglobal.com/golf. Let's start with the ladies, the Mercedes-Benz Intercollegiate, hosted by the Volunteers of Tennessee. And how about the rally? Final day by Wake Forest, a team we have discussed early in the fall. Very easy to put a lot of focus on Stanford, and those women have earned every bit of the press they get. But Wake Forest, at least early on in this fall, saying, don't forget about us. We're pretty darn good as well, and they proved it once again.
Yeah, this is one of those tournaments where – yeah, they only beat UCF by 3 shots, but I think the ability to come back, rally on the final day, I mean, there's something to be said about that and what that does in making a team better. Because, I mean, we've seen it before. A lot of times, I don't want to throw out the C word, but some teams get complacent when they start winning and it's all coming easy. For the Demon Deacons to have this experience and having to come from third to first on the final day, yes, they got a little bit of help from Virginia, who shot one under, which was 11 shots worse than Wake, but to be able to just kind of come together and say, hey, we're not going to lose this tournament, and they were able to do it. So, I mean, this is almost just as impressive as the win last week.
Yeah, you think about the rally late, UCF. How about them? 18 under par, and you touched on Virginia. This is two events now in the fall where I think they could have made a huge statement, and a couple times in a row now, the final rounds, not quite up to what they were able to do the first couple of days.
It's a 3-round event, college golf, as we know. I mean, you can't just show up 2 days, but I think they'll figure it out. I mean, this is a balanced team. Amanda Sandbach has turned into a bona fide superstar. And going back to my Golden Knights for a second, and I don't know if they're still called the Golden Knights. I think they're just the Knights now. But when I went there, they were the Golden Knights. Probably best nickname in college golf, Pimpasa Susuthom. Her nickname is Sandwich. So I don't know why. That's something that we'll have to uncover, use our reporting skills and figure it out. But
yeah, you've got to get to the cool bottom nickname of that.
And it depends sandwich on what kind of sandwich, too. I mean, are we talking about like a club or like a, I don't know, like a hot dog? I mean, because a hot dog's a sandwich.
Give me tuna on rye toast.
Oh,
I'm old.
I hate rye bread. Rye bread to me, it's just it doesn't taste good. I love tuna. I love chicken salad. I can do that. I'm not opposed to mayo, but rye bread, there's just something about it that just, it just doesn't, it doesn't agree with my taste buds. I think my favorite is a French dip. I like a really good French dip.
Next time you're up north, whenever you're up north, go get a proper loaf of rye bread from New York City, anywhere up in the Northeast.
Jersey or New York?
Either way, you can't lose. Well, I know up there, everything's different. They say it's the water, the bagels are better, the pizza's better. But tell me after one of those journeys, and then if you don't like it, I will allow you to stay in your lane once again. But I'll eat all the rye bread I can possibly get. But yeah, really good week by UCF, a strong showing once again by Virginia, and then Michigan. You touched on the fact of really good, could potentially be special, but when you don't have Ashley Lau in the lineup, perhaps the lack of experience could be something that might be slightly concerning for head coach Dan Dowling.
Yeah, and if she ends up, you know, getting through Q school second stage, which is next month, and then decides to turn pro and play Q series, I think this is a little bit of a concerning thing, because as we mentioned, there's five seniors on this team, but if you don't have Ashley Lau, one of those two freshmen that Jam brought in is going to have to be thrust into the lineup and be expected to produce. And right now, I would say that probably maybe a 4 or 5 out of 10 on the concern scale.
Yeah, still a lot has to play itself out. But as we know, my wife, standout at Michigan.
Hall of Famer.
Days. Well, you know, she's up there. She's actually on her way up to Ohio now for another Hall of Fame induction. It's very relative.
Are you in any Hall of Fames, Berkeley?
No.
Are you a Hall of Famer?
No, I am absolutely
just
not.
Just at home.
But
you're at home.
Yeah, I'm a Hall of Fame dad, which is all that matters. But yeah, my better half, proud of her making the journey up for another induction back in her old stomping grounds. We digress. We get back to the Hall of Fame players in college golf. And how about your takeaways from the Memorial hosted by Texas A&M? And, you know, we were intrigued by what head coach Garrett Chadwell did in his first year there, making it into match play at Greyhawk. And, man, there's something there. The whole dynamic has changed, in my opinion, in College Station.
Yeah, I think there was a little bit of question on how would they build off of what most would consider a surprise run to the semifinals last year. And they've kind of proven so far that they're not about a sophomore slump here, you know, so to speak. And I think one of the things, obviously, Jenny Park has been playing some great golf. Zoe Slaughter is just a consistent presence in that lineup, very talented. But getting Haley Cooper back to a level that we saw her at as a junior when she was a 5-time AJGA All-American, even as a freshman at the University of Texas, she was the Big 12 Freshman of the Year. I believe she was the Big 12 Player of the Year as well. And then she was also a first-team All-American. But hadn't finished in the top 10 in a college event since her freshman year when she won an event called the Bruzzi Challenge during that spring. All of a sudden now she has back-to-back top 10s. And talking with Garrett coming into the season, he had mentioned to me, like, don't be surprised, because I was asking him about his team, and obviously he had everyone coming back, and you have Blanca Fernandez, Garcia, and all these talented players. And I didn't really bring up Haley Cooper because she hadn't really played all that well since transferring. But he goes, you know, just so you know, like, Haley's been playing incredible golf right now. Don't be surprised if she makes noise. And lo and behold, look what's happened.
Yeah, even par on that final day for A&M, 4-shot victory over the Longhorns, who shot 7 over on that last day. Nice final round charge by the Tar Heels. Florida in the mix as well. They fell back, ultimately finished 4th. But good to see some different teams, if you will, making some statements early in the fall, potentially lending itself to the prospects for some good springs from maybe teams we don't necessarily think of. And it's still early, but just something to put on the radar, think about as this fall moves along. As we go from the women to the men, And all I look at on our rundown, people might say, how do we go about it? Brendley owns the rundown. This is where we need to go. I try to navigate us through it all. And all you put is craziness at the Ram Masters. What was so crazy about what Colorado State did?
Well, we've been for the last 2 weeks, whether it's been on this podcast or on television or, you know, just talking amongst ourselves, we've been talking about this kind of red number epidemic or whatever you want to call it in college golf. And that, I guess it wouldn't be an epidemic. I guess it would just be like a trend or, you know, something like that. But there's a lot of low scores. There's a lot of records that continue to be broken. We've nearly had 359s on the men's side. And all of a sudden, I shout out, and I don't have time to go look at it, but someone kind of tipped me off to this, and I forget who it was. I think it might have been one of the coaches, maybe the coach at South Dakota. Anyways, I'm getting lost in the weeds here. I get a message, and it's just a screenshot of Golf Stat where in the top above the leaderboard, you know, it gives the tournament director or who's ever controlling the scores ability to write stuff, whether it's what the weather forecast is or if there's a suspension in play or just whatever someone needs to know. And it's like six lines deep. It's all red type. And let me just read it real quickly, because it says, congrats to Elliot Bunyavirach. I'm just butchered that. UC San Diego for his ace on number two with an 8-iron in the first round. But it's not done yet. Creighton Sean Campbell with the hole-in-one in round two with the pitching wedge on the ninth. KP from Texas A&M Corpus Christi adds his own ace on the 14th this afternoon. And we're not done yet. UNC's Garrett Willis with the double eagle on number one in the second with an 8-iron from 210 yards. First off, 8-iron from 210 yards.
That's a problem, and we know it, you know, maybe some altitude, but that's still.
But yeah, well, that's true. That's it is in Fort Collins.
That's the three reason hole I in ones.
Yeah, three hole in ones in an albatross or a double eagle. Mm-hmm. I don't know what side of the coin you're on with that, but that's insane. I've never heard of that happen before. So that is craziness. That is the definition of craziness.
I like it. So your slug was right. Craziness at the Ram Masters, Colorado State winning that event. But the headliner for the men this past week, Olympia Fields, Stanford, they don't only win, they win by 12. Michael Thorbjornsson picks up a victory as well. Clean sweep for the Cardinal. Michael going to be joining us in just a short moment from now. But you look at Stanford, 9-under, Florida, Illinois tied for second at 3-over, Arizona State 4-over. I think we had touched on it earlier. I want to see Carl Phillips and Michael Thorbjornsson do something. Maybe they listened to the pod. Maybe they said, we're going to shut these guys up, because that's exactly what they did.
Yeah. And it was just, it was a little interesting because, you know, I obviously there were so many storylines with so many great teams in this event, but when you look at the Stanford team, what they were able to do, I mean, there was a number of ways you could have gone with it. You know, if you were myself and writing the recap last Sunday night, Michael Thorbjornsson, first college win. I mean, it was, I think we were both shocked his freshman year when him and Carl combined for one top 10, he didn't have any. I know it was shortened because of the pandemic and all of that, but I was very shocked by that. 3 years later, he's one of the best amateurs in the world, finally gets that first college win. And he's been very consistent. I mean, he was a second team All-American last year, but there's something to be said for getting over that hump and finally breaking through. We saw it on the professional level on the PGA Tour this spring with Scottie Scheffler and what kind of he was able to do after he won in Phoenix. I mean, he goes on and wins, you know, the Masters and the match play and all of these events, you know, makes the President's Cup team. So I anticipate something similar at a college level for Michael, but then also with this team, Carl Phillips, and you talk about the finger injury, that was very serious. You talk about the last time we saw him at the US Amateur a few weeks ago when he was in that playoff to get in a match play, and he just laid the sod over about 150-yard shot and hit it about maybe 80.
We've all been there.
Yeah, and so, but it's just interesting because – you just never expect a player of Carl's caliber to hit a shot like that in that kind of pressure situation. But it's good to see that he's bounced back from that. And finally, Stanford. I mean, this squad has continually, I don't want to call it up and down, but their good has been really good. I mean, we talked about winning the 2019 NCAA team title on the back of that really hot spring that they had a few years back. We look at last fall where they won Colonial, which is, along with Olympia Fields, two of the premier most loaded events of the regular season. They win there, and then they come and win another event over a lot of great teams. I mean, they beat North Carolina, who was the preseason number one team in the country, by 32 shots. So this is something that Conrad Ray, their head coach, has to be super excited about. I mean, Michael's in the winner's circle. Carl's, you know, playing at a level that we expect him to do. Barclay Brown, Walker Cupper was T12. If he could just figure out, you know, maybe that fifth spot, because it looks like Ethan Ng on the back of a T12 finish here, probably has solidified his spot in the lineup for a while. If Conrad can find a consistent fifth scorer, this is a top five team in the country easily.
We will talk about the reaction stock up, stock down of others and their performances just outside of Chicago, but it seems like a natural segue to introduce the medalist from Olympia Fields, Michael Thorbjørnsen. We promised he would be here. He is now here. Michael Thorbjørnsen joining us. We sang all your praises for your performance and what your team did, but for you individually, Michael, what did it finally mean to get over the hump and get the job done in college golf?
Well, it meant a lot. I've been playing some pretty good golf these past two summers. Managed to win the Western Am, first one in a while since junior golf. And it just feels really good. I remember actually this past US Am at Ridgewood, I was talking to Stu a little bit, just catching up, and we ended up talking about college, kind of what that does for you from a golfing standpoint. And he really said that college is where you kind of need to learn how to win. And I took that to heart. I think that's a very important thing. Something you definitely got to get comfortable doing and learning how to do it. So just getting that first win under my belt in our first college event of the season definitely feels good.
Where was your level of frustration considering all the success you had heading into Stanford? You referenced the victories in the summers away from college golf. What were the things that really got under your skin when it got back to college golf of, gosh, why aren't I doing what I know I'm capable of getting done?
I wouldn't say I was getting too frustrated. I had a couple second place finishes last year. I guess it doesn't hurt so much when I'm losing by or coming in second by five or six strokes. But I mean, I know my time was coming. I feel like I'm in a good spot with my game, and it's just only a matter of time before I break through.
Yeah, Michael, you have a wealth of resources at Stanford, whether it's your head coach, Conrad Ray, or your teammates, but kind of across the hall, Rose Zhang is not only the top-ranked amateur, women's amateur in the world, but one of the best women's amateurs of all time. You've talked in the past about kind of what you've learned from her, but, you know, just kind of maybe talk for our viewers who may not have heard that. I mean, how is Rose Zhang and being around her almost every day, how has that improved your golf game?
Oh, it's helped and improved my golf game a lot. Just spending time with her, getting to know her as a person more too. I mean, I always forget that she's in the class below me. It always feels like when I'm talking to her that I'm talking to someone that's a lot older than me and has a lot more experience. So just surrounding yourself with that. And I mean, she's obviously an exceptional golfer. So I'm just always picking her brain about different things, just like, I don't know, like how she even manages her time away from golf, like with schoolwork and everything. I'm just learning everything from her. From a golf standpoint, she has a very an unbelievable swing, mechanics wise and everything. So I pick her brain a couple times on the range, or if I have a problem, I'll have her take a look at it. And just everything. The way she composes herself on the golf course, I've played a couple rounds with her last year during the school year just for practice. And then we paired up together in Geneva for the Arnold Palmer Cup. So that was really cool. And what she thinks is her strongest part of the game is her consistency. And I'd have to agree. I mean, she says she's not the longest or the straightest driver or the best iron player, best putter or whatever. But I mean, I think she's the best in every single aspect of the game. But the way she approaches each and every shot and each and every course is something that I've tried to apply to my game these past few months or this past year, just kind of playing with like no regrets, like at the end of the round, thinking back like, oh, I should have done this. Like I was a lot smarter, or why did I hit this club? Like it makes no sense. So just really making sure I go through my whole pre-shot routine correctly and really thinking through every single part of the shot.
Now Rose is undoubtedly wise beyond her years, but she's also a kid at heart. We had her on this podcast about a year ago, and we Burko, her and I really went deep on Halloween candy. So she, you know, she still has a little bit of kid in her. But speaking of, well, not speaking of candy, but speaking of the opposite of that, working out. I know as a college athlete, that's a big part of your routine is getting in the gym, taking care of your body. Is there a particular workout that you're really high on right now, or what's the hardest workout that you're doing currently?
Probably right. I'd say that answer would change throughout the year. Over the summer and beginning of the school year, I'd say anything lower body is probably going to be the most difficult, just because over the summer I don't really focus on lower body too much. But yeah, I guess at last week at Olympia, I think every morning the week before and during that week at the tournament, Carl and I went to the gym at like 6:30 in the morning just before our rounds, and I just got a quick pump in, and that really helps me personally, just because I mean I'm big into swing and everything, so knowing and feeling exactly where my body is helps a lot, being able to hit the ball straight. And yeah, just having that muscle awareness after that pump. So just doing, I don't know, rows or something, or just like bench press, just basic stuff really gets the job done.
Who bench presses more, you or Carl?
Oh, definitely. Probably Carl. Yeah, definitely Carl, I'd say. Carl he's built like a tank. I can't compete against him, I'd say.
Squats too. He's got you in that.
Yeah. I mean, if you see my legs and you see his, it's not really close.
See, I knew Michael, you and I were very similar, because during the summers, I stay away from the lower body leg work too. In addition, the upper body as well. When you get to my age, you just hope to get out of bed. You run your 3 to 5 miles a day. Now in a race, a cardio race, I'm thinking We might have something going on there, but in terms of the weight room, Brentley knows I'm a cardio guy. We can't go with the bulk, right? Right, Brentley?
Yeah, well, I'm also that, but I don't know. I still have PTSD from our little hit at the Augusta National Women's Amateur this year, where I looked about 800 pounds sitting next to you. So that was motivation to start getting back and running and swimming and playing some basketball.
You know, that's what I try to do. I try to inspire people at every level with that. But as we get back on point here, not completely off the rails, Michael, you know, Brentley was asking about Carl and what you guys do. How would you describe the relationship as you guys are somewhat connected from starting at Stanford to him on the bag abandoned for you a couple years ago for the U.S. Amateur? It seems, at least from the outside in, you guys are Laurel and Hardy, you know, Heckle and Jekyll. What is that relationship like day in, week out, that a lot of people don't get to see?
I think Carl and I, we've been really close friends for I'm 21 now. Wow. So 10 years, I'd say. We've had, I guess during the beginning of those 10 years, he's been traveling a lot. So I didn't really see him that much at junior events, but senior year is when it really, that friendship strengthened. He spent like 3-4 months at my house during quarantine, and then see a lot of him over the summer. And I don't know, basically, like while we're at school or just in general now, like he's basically like my brother. Like we spend our whole days together. Now he's not, we're not roommates this year. He's in the room just above mine, on the floor above mine. So, I mean, I still see him every single day. I mean, we're, after this phone call, we are going to the gym together. So it's very nice. We push each other. We help each other out in the best ways that we can. And we both come from pretty similar backgrounds and have very similar interests and goals. So it's always nice to have someone along for the journey.
Now, going from friends to family, I mean, you have three sisters, is that right?
Right.
And they all play golf, but do you have any interests or hobbies because you have three sisters? I mean, is there anything that maybe people wouldn't expect you to be into or like to do that's maybe a byproduct of you know, being amongst, you know, your three sisters?
Probably, I can't really think of anything right now. We've spent a lot of time away from each other, just because of living situations, family stuff, all that. But, I don't know, spending time with them now, just like being in their presence is nice. I used to watch a lot of their basketball games up, in Wellesley, Massachusetts when we were all living together. So I guess that's one thing, that we kind of bond over. Like we'd play basketball a lot together when we were younger. And just even now, they, like when we are together, I'll go with my little sister, Teresa, to the driving range with my dad. That's what we did this past summer, which was quite nice.
Mm-hmm. Now, your dad's name is Ted, but I'm looking at your Stanford bio. Is his name really Thorbjorn Thorbjornsson?
Yes, it is.
Would make you Thorbjorn's son, like Thorbjorn's, like it's just right.
That last name is, yeah, Thorbjornsson, yeah. So it's like my last name translates to the son of a thunder bear. So
thunder bear.
Well, we knew the thunder bear translation because of Thorbjorn Olsson,
right?
But that's interesting. That,
the son at the end is son of. So
we're you're stuck with Burko and Brentley.
Probably stands for something. Maybe change the subject just a little bit. The big thing in college golf right now is name, image, and likeness. And you're obviously kind of at the center of that as one of the game's kind of preeminent stars. Just want to kind of get your thoughts on how that has improved maybe your college experience at all, or maybe what your take on it is.
Yeah. I mean, I think NIL is great, obviously. I don't know if benefiting is the right word to say or to use, but it definitely helps a lot just with expenses, especially over the summer with all the travel that us golfers are doing, flying almost weekly. Just kind of relieve some stress, not really having to worry about the financial part of golf. And that's something that I guess my family has struggled with a little bit in the past 4 years or so. So just now being able to play in any tournament I want and go to any tournament I want helps a lot, as well as I guess it incentivizes student athletes to stay in school a little longer. I guess some people might feel the need to turn pro to get that early paycheck or those deals. And now I can still enjoy my time at school while not having to worry about the financial part.
And you're a Whoop guy too, right?
I am a Whoop guy.
Yeah, unless he gets Whoop out of it.
I mean, you know, if you're the son of a thunder bear, right? You got to have a Whoop understanding. How has that changed maybe your perspective of preparation, recovery? Has it had any impact that you've seen so far?
Yeah, it's definitely had an impact. I mean, I think this past year I was talking to coach, or even at the beginning of a couple of weeks ago, we have one-on-one meetings and stuff like that. And one thing that I said that I'm trying to improve on that I've been learning a lot about over the summer in the past year is like, I really want to improve my mental and physical just self in general. Cause I mean, I can't, like, my body is my job. Basically, I need my body to perform well. So treating my body like a temple is something I'm trying my best to do. And Whoop definitely helps with that. Just even if I guess the data, like the recovery ratings that you get or recovery scores that you get, say they are right or aren't right or whatever. Like it forces me to go to bed early. It keeps me on my toes about like what I'm eating, all the exercise that I'm getting. So yeah, I mean, it's forcing good habits on me.
See, Brentley, you just found your inspiration to treat your body like a temple. This is all
I don't want to get a Whoop because I don't want to get a Whoop because I'm afraid of what it would say every morning. I feel like I don't want to know. I think it was Colin Morikawa who just talked about this. Like, I almost don't want to know if I've had like 10% recovery.
Yeah. Yeah. It's stuff like that where if you do get a 10% recovery, it's like, oh, I felt great that morning waking up, yeah. But I got a different rating or score than what I thought I would get. So I don't really let that get to me too much, but it's still very helpful.
Yeah. Brentley and I are more field players. We don't get caught up in the semantics.
I don't know about that.
Well, I would.
I'm not a player at all.
I would
guy.
Be devastated to see with a 6 and 8 year old what my Whoop recovery would look like. So I don't even want to go there. Yeah, exactly. Michael, before we let you go, word on the street is you're a big video game guy. Give me your favorite games to play when you have a chance.
Okay. I guess it's kind of changing a little bit now, but all of last year, the past 3 years, Warzone, Call of Duty has been probably my top game. Towards the end of last year, kind of shifted over to 2K Golf just so that everyone on the golf team can play. It's been a lot of fun. I mean, Carl and I play Warzone a lot, so we're kind of just a lot better than everyone else, so it's not really that much fun playing. But yeah, we kind of transitioned over this year to I bought a Nintendo Switch for the team, so we've been playing a lot of Mario Kart.
That's
very
talking.
Heated. Yeah, yeah, it's been a lot of fun. And then this new game called Fall Guys, which I can't really describe. It's almost like Wipeout in a way. But those are the games that I've been playing recently.
I love it because Santa Claus got my 6 and 8 year olds Nintendo Switches last year. And
oh, great.
I'm ashamed to say my 8 year old probably is the best one in the house. And my wife and I are fairly competitive, so I can relate to that. Brentley, I know you wanted to throw a few games at Michael to see if there was any flavor in his time of maybe going old school.
Yeah, so I mean, he did say he's 21, so I would probably guess that you'll probably bat about 500 here. But have you ever played Donkey Kong Country on N64?
I don't know. I remember playing some sort of Donkey Kong, like monkey ball flying thing on the GameCube when I was little. I'm not sure if that's
that
what
counts.
You're
that's close.
About,
what about GoldenEye 007?
No. No, didn't really get to my. I never got an Xbox, or I didn't get an Xbox until probably my junior year of high school. My parents kind of kept that away from me, knowing that I would kind of just play video games the whole day.
Well, this predates Xbox, so I really feel old now. All right, last one. I got two more actually. Roller Coaster Tycoon.
Is sounds familiar, but I have not played it, no.
And then finally, in this one, you probably have played before. Right? This is the game that I'm really high on right now, Rocket League.
Rocket League, yeah. I mean, I've dabbled a little bit, but
Okay.
I'm awful.
I was addicted for a while. I was addicted for a while. But all right. That's good though.
Yeah, it's a nice balance. And as my youngsters have the Nintendo Switch and I'm up in the game room, what my wife did for me a couple of years ago, since I've got both you guys by several years.
She got me Pong, right?
She got me the old school tabletop sit down that has like 65 games from Pac-Man to Donkey Kong to Centipede.
Oh, wow.
So, oh yeah, no, it's a time waster. So I've gotten my boys into that. So we have the combination of games from 2022 to the old school games from the 1980s. So it's, you know, we've got all the decades covered as we wrap up with you, my friend. Always good to catch up. Congratulations, Michael, once again, for your victory and helping the team pick up the W as well. Continued success throughout the rest of the fall, and look forward to catching up again soon.
Hey, thanks, Berko and Brantley, for having me. Appreciate it.
You got to take care of Michael.
Go lift well, Michael.
Michael Thor Bjornsson, heck of a kid. You and I have gotten to know him fairly well in recent years, but I think it's what we enjoy the most, Brantley, that you can spend 15, 20 minutes talking about golf, weightlifting, NIL, Whoop, video games. It sort of goes back to what we said at the beginning of the show of we really love it. And by the way, Michael Thorbjornsson is, I think his upside the next two years and the next 20 years, buy, if you want to buy low, sell high, I'm thinking you buy low now, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, you just look at the athleticism too, and you put him on a short list in terms of, like you said, that extreme potential with a Gordon Sargent, with a Caleb Surratt. But yeah, I mean, getting back to kind of us, you know, yeah, we get off the rails a little bit, but I really think, you know, though some people might say, well, why are you asking them about video games? Why are you asking about this stuff? It humanizes these guys. Not that they're, you know, larger than life figures. I mean, they're just college kids, right? But they're really good at golf. And, you know, you can only talk about the golf swing and birdies and bogeys so much. And I think it's very interesting. I mean, clearly, and you could tell it in his voice, Berko, as soon as we brought the subject of video games, it almost was like he just wanted to talk to us for like 30 minutes and just go over everything that he plays.
Yeah, I think he was expecting an invite to the game room up here to say, hey, can we play some
Miss Pac-Man? When you have 75 games, do you even have one game? I mean, is that like the Cheesecake Factory menu where there's just way too much stuff? You know,
legit question. You always center around the 5 or 10, maybe a nice run of Galaga for an hour, see how many stages you can get deep into. But
I didn't know that you were a big fan of this, Berko, because in 2019, when the NCAA championships were in Fayetteville, Arkansas, there was a place called Arcadia Retrocade, and it was this huge building, like in a strip mall, and Lance Ringler from Golf Week and I went Lance went about 5 nights. I only went 2, but you go in, you pay $20 at the door, and there is every arcade game that's ever been created. You could buy for $1, you could buy a grape soda and a glass bottle. And it was a great time. I wish that I would have known. You could have procured the invite, but if you're up there, you're going to be up there. So you should check it out.
I'm going to be at the Blessings in a couple of weeks. I took my kids to see my folks in New Jersey this summer. Similar type of place. You need to get a little space from grandma and grandpa. Let's just put it this way. My boys and myself, we spent so much time there. At the end, he's like, oh, by the way, you've earned a free card for your next visit. So what started out as an hour had me running out to the parking meter 2.5 hours later to throw in more quarters. So I'm doing
everything. Well, good news is Arcadia Retrocade has survived COVID. Woo! It is open. They've expanded. They bought the place next door, and you could go. It opens at 2:30 every day. Just looks it up for you.
Yeah, I mean, we know what I'm doing during my downtime in Arkansas. Real quick, as we promised it, stock up, stock down from Olympia Fields. And again, this is an ever-changing thing. You know, Florida, really nice. I'm going to give Illinois a home game, if you will. But to be in the mix, finish tied for second, awfully impressive. We touched on the fact, or you more importantly, that Pepperdine and Texas have to rebuild. I'm going to throw North Carolina to finish 11th, 32 shots out of first for a team that we made the arguments one of the two best in the country. It's one event. I need to see more from them moving forward.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think Vanderbilt now is the clear-cut number one. That didn't last long, lasted all of 2 weeks. But I think maybe Pepperdine, just because they did finish 11 shots worse than North Carolina. They only beat two teams. William Mao tied for 60th. So I'm most concerned about that. I wrote a little bit of a takeaways column on Sunday night after this tournament was over, and that was one of the things where I kind of answered that question. Who am I most concerned about out of those three, Texas, UNC, Pepperdine? I went with Pepperdine, though. You know, there's still a lot of talent there. Michael Beard's one of the best coaches in the country. They can figure it out. So my stock up, it's a tie. I think Alabama behind Cannon Claycomb, who's had an unbelievable start to this fall. They're trending. They have a lot of momentum right now. Young team, really exciting. And then Arizona State. Without David Puge, having him turn pro, someone was going to need to step up. And you would have thought that it could have been Preston Summerhays, but Riggs Johnston, an unbelievable story, really struggled last spring. Didn't even make the six-man lineup at the NCAA championships or regionals. And I think that was even with David Puge being hurt. And all of a sudden comes out and has back-to-back top fives to start the fall. Riggs Johnston, a super nice kid, a great talent, can get really hot, make a lot of birdies. I think shot 63 a couple years ago at Greyhawk in one of those rounds. If he's playing like this, I don't know how much they're going to miss Pooch. I mean, of course they're going to miss him. He was an All-American player. But with Riggs playing like this, they have withstood that, or they can withstand that. And I think that you can't count him out.
Love it. Love it as we do each and every week. We're going to wrap things up. Our thanks to Michael Thorbjornsson for spending some time with us this week on the pod. And of course, thanks to you guys, as always, for tuning in to listen. Hope you enjoyed it. And of course, we'll run it back right same time, same bat channel, roughly. We'll be back next week on College Golf Talk. For Brentley, I'm Burko. We'll see you next time.